Abraham, welcome back.
Good to be back. Good to be back.
I don't know if you knew it, but striking is all the rage right now. Striking is having kind of a moment. Should we go on strike?
No, I'm on a little bit of a sabbatical. I am, because I've got an amazing wife. She kind of went behind my back in a good way and talked to my office manager and effectively kind of cleared out a 5 to 6 week period of time. So I've been home more and been able to do a bunch of stuff around the family that I haven't really been able to do for since we started the firm. So I've been having a wonderful end of the summer.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
I kind of am on strike a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Just like a Seattle teacher, no different. So of course, Seattle teachers threatened to strike until the very last minute, then went back to class. But this is the one that really gets me. You know, 52,000, there are 52,000 state employees who are under the same union. And they did a kind of symbolic, some of them walk off the job because they want more money. Like in the middle of a budget crisis, one of the worst the state has ever seen, state workers want a raise.
Yeah. And I mean, and so you're looking at, you know, an average workday, average work week, they grade paper. Yeah. Well, a lot of us do a lot of things outside of our normal job. But if you look at on a rolling 12-month basis, the average Seattle school teacher is getting paid, not including benefits, an annual rate of about 200 grand a year. Oh, it's 140. You work 7 months out of the year, man.
Yeah, right. Annualized. Right?
And I just said this on another podcast. I said, hey, if you're a young kid out there that's saying there's no opportunity, I will give you a fail-proof way to be a millionaire by the time you're 35. I guarantee.
Okay.
During the summer, you're going to start a landscaping business that you're going to run by yourself. You're going to get 5 or 6 homes you're going to take care of. You're going to do those in your months off. And there'll be a little overlap, so you have to work a little extra. But you're going to, because if a place like Washington, we've got a year-round yard service that comes. But, you know, I go 3 months without seeing those guys sometimes in the winter, right? So you can do that. And then in addition, starting November 1st, on the weekends and at nights after school, you're going to put up and take down Christmas lights. Okay, I pay people to do that here too.
Yeah.
Okay, you do that, live off your teacher's salary, bank the money you make from landscaping and from the Christmas lights deal. You'll get to live on 150 grand a year, not including benefits. And I guarantee you'll be a millionaire by the time you're 35. There you go.
Yeah. Well, and that's true. It's like, you know, they get the summer off, but they don't have to take the summer off. You know, that's 3 months that they could work if they want to work. And if they want a break, then yeah, I mean, $140,000 before benefits to work 180 days is pretty phenomenal. And we already looked at the data. They are the highest paid teachers in the country.
Well, and here's the other thing. Okay. Is our education system about enriching teachers or making superintendents more money? Is it about educating kids?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's enough for a teacher? Like, yeah. What, 140 grand for 7 months worth of work isn't enough? What do you want? How much, like, what's the number? And this is just, you know, you and I were talking about, there's this childlike belief that everything in government runs so perfectly and so efficiently, the only problem are the greedy people that aren't giving enough money. I'd flip it around to you and go, can someone show me evidence of there not being enough money or enough funding?
Yeah.
And I'm not, I'm not out here advocating writ large for rich people to get more tax write-offs and tax cuts or anything like that. I'm just saying what I see everywhere I look is incompetence and mismanagement of a budget. And it has nothing to do with looking at things through a political lens. We see it everywhere. Anybody that lives in the state can see it. Why is the knee-jerk response to give the same people that just cooked a horrific, unedible meal? Why would your response be, oh, we don't have a talent problem. We got to build them a better kitchen.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's this mentality. And I liked the Seattle public school superintendent who's new. He was like very honest about the situation with the union. He came out and he's like, no, we're broke. And I was like, I'm glad to hear. I mean, I know they came to a tentative agreement, but certainly they didn't get the money that they wanted. And he was very firm about it. Like we have an $80 million budget deficit. We can't give them the raises that they're seeking.
I will say, as everybody knows, we're broke. And so we have to be really thoughtful around how we can spend the money that we do have. Now, look, we do have $1.35 billion. I appreciate that. But almost all of that money is kind of already earmarked. And so the issue is, if we need to spend more money, where would we take it? And the last thing I want to do is to make schools worse in order to fund something else that maybe we didn't necessarily need.
Well, and just again, what is the right amount to pay somebody that gets full benefits, gets almost the status of being impossible to fire,
gets
a pension, gets the other ancillary benefits that come with it for 7 months? I'm not minimizing the I love teachers, right? But just saying, you're looking at our public school system and you think that is the most urgent need for additional funding? You're out of your mind.
But I feel like this is Democrats getting eaten by the beast that they created. I mean, when you look at, you know, most of the parents whose kids were like on the fence about, am I going to go back to school? You know, they voted for this stuff. And they're part of a party that has given a lot of power to teachers unions and the WEA. And the same what's happening at the state level with the Washington Federation of State Employees. You know, you guys elected someone who wanted big government. Big government is good for big government unions. And now they're threatening to walk off the job. And Bob's like, well, you know, we're in a budget crisis. But it's like, you guys did this, Bob. I don't feel bad for you. You gave power to the unions. They're using the power that they gave you to leverage more money.
That's all they care about.
Right.
If the unions gave a damn about the state or what was good for it, we wouldn't make a lot of the decisions that we're making.
100%.
Right? Like, and the other side of it too is, you know, I think you and I have talked about it before. This banner or this this flock of like morality that we hang over the shoulders of the unions. Can someone explain to me how a union? I mean, if you're all ginned up on citizens. Citizens United ruling. How is it that you don't think that unions having unfettered ability to fund and engage in, it's the same problem, right? It's concentrated power and special interests. And I just don't understand why we apply these political divides to it. You know, where I feel like I'm pretty consistent, where I'm like, hey, you know, I'm gonna turn code on this and I'm gonna change what I said. I'm gonna change my mind. I think we do need to re-examine Citizens United, and I think we should be looking very carefully at any organization that does not represent an individual, right? Because when we vote, our vote represents an individual. I think we should be looking with a jaundiced eye at any organization putting substantial amounts of money into public elections where the outcomes benefit those leaders. Oh, it benefits our employees. Yeah, sure it does. What does it do to your salary? What does it do to your power? What does it do with the legislature, right? Like the exact same questioning, the exact same lack of trust and skepticism, which is healthy, should be looked at, when we're looking at the union's role in elections, that it is with Microsoft.
Right. Because you could see a half million
people are people
donation.
Are people.
Right. There could be a $500,000 donation from the business community to the initiative to repeal the income tax. And people be like, wow, they're evil. And then you could have $2 million from the unions to the no campaign and nobody, the media doesn't blink.
No, because, well, that's the will of the voter. Well,
good
that's,
grief.
Isn't that, is it? How is that any different than being the will of the employees that work at that company, right? Why is that any different? It's just, and it's built on this belief that is really childlike, right? Like if we take a human being and we put them inside of a state government or a government agency or a union, that all of a sudden they're no longer a human being anymore, that they will act with the utmost interest of the public at heart and they will act with nobility and sensibility. And you're going, no, like everybody else, like going on strike or threatening to go on strike the night before school starts, you didn't do that because you care about kids. You do it because you care about you.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, and at least capitalists are honest about it, right? At least when I'm managing money, nobody thinks I'm doing that because I care about the environment.
Right. Yeah.
Right. They think I do it because I'm trying to make money. Well, the same, go look, anybody look at what the salary is for the head of the teachers union nationally, I'm forgetting what you call that union.
Becky Pringle.
Last time I checked, her salary is over $1 million a year.
Yeah.
So
she's doing it for the kids.
She,
socialism.
Oh,
yay,
it's always for
you
the
know.
Kids.
Well, yeah. And it's this entitlement mentality that's trickling down. I mean, of course, the Starbucks workers, you know, formed a union, even though they get like $25 an hour, great benefits, they'll pay for their college. This is a new one, though. The employees at MOHAI, Seattle's Museum of History and Industry, decided that they were going to unionize. This is what one of their union leaders said to the Seattle Times. Quote, these are people, Zach, who work at a museum, like a pretty small museum in Seattle on the waterfront, okay? They're big angry. They want more money and all this stuff. They said low pay, understaffing, high turnover. So Emily Turner, who's part of now this union, says, quote, we want more autonomy over our working conditions and to do things democratically. They want more autonomy at work, Zach. It's like they don't understand the concept of job. You
or
have a
value.
Job, right? Or value.
Hey, so yeah, let me give you a little quick learning lesson for the kids out there. If you want to have any leverage in your career, don't go work in a museum. Okay, just you know why? I like museums. I'm a big history buff, all that kind of stuff. You don't deliver a tremendous amount of value, even if you're the best museum employee, because a lot of people can do it. It's not a rare skill. So why don't you get off your ass and go find another job? Right? That's not my problem.
It's not North Korea. It's not a forced labor camp. And yeah, I mean, I think there are some specialized museum employees. Like if you're talking about the Smithsonian or something and exhibits, fine. But that's not what you're talking about at MOHAI. It's just, I'm not
but,
saying.
But even them, look, even them, Brandy, like, okay, go offer $100,000 for it. Here's the thing I would tell them. Okay, what do you want your salary set at? You want $100,000 a year to work in a museum? Okay, here's the deal. I'll give you $100,000 a year, but you got to open up the application process to everybody. Okay, here's what I'm willing to bet. If you get the salaries you want, none of you will have a job. Hmm. People are going to come in that are more educated, that are smarter, that can read off a script better than you, that will shut up and actually do the work for that amount of money. And you guys will end up with out of job anyway. You cannot, look, governments have tried this, and this is why socialism always fails. Paying somebody to dig a hole and paying another one to fill it up is not economic progress. It leads to no higher level of living for anybody else. At best, it is a short-term pacifier type economic solution that makes somebody feel better in the moment, but leads to decreased overall economic productivity, which makes all of us less rich.
Yeah.
It's just, this is idiocy. It's like, it's almost like we're waging a campaign against calories because calories are making us fat. It really, it's that dumb.
Yeah.
It really is. I don't like calories.
Well,
okay.
Like,
well,
the Starbucks baristas, you know, I mean, Starbucks, how has it responded? So you had the socialist mayor who called for a boycott of Starbucks late 2025. Starbucks announces, what is it going to do? It's going to open a HQ in Tennessee. Starbucks union, you know, unionizes, they're striking at locations. What does Starbucks do? Closes a bunch of stores. And then still, after all that, this week, a King County councilwoman came out and said, we should boycott Starbucks. It's like, oh my gosh, now you do realize that for those union baristas who you're encouraging to take to the picket line and encourage people to boycott, you're basically they're not going to have a job. So they're going to go from having a damn good paid barista job to having no job because the store that they were in is going to close.
Yeah. And this is where people look, if you find yourself being sympathetic, and I know if they're listening to this podcast, they probably don't, but if you find yourself being sympathetic to the socialist line or the drivel coming out of there, look, at the end of the day, this just comes down, and I'm not trying to be rude, but it just comes down to stupidity.
Yeah.
The reason that these things are getting pushed forward is because you've elected idiots. And of course, they're going to lobby for what is immediately good for them, just like your five-year-old would lobby for another stack of cookies right before bedtime. And it literally is the exact same psychology with about the same amount of forethought and research put into both.
Yeah.
Okay.
100%.
It really is. That's how stupid this whole thing is. And when we elect unserious people that have never had a job, this is my whole thing. The superintendent is a perfect example of what you and I have talked about before. If he took this job, more importantly, if he got hired for this job, I highly doubt the guy is a conservative or sees eye to eye.
Oh, 100%.
You know, okay. But what is he? He's an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. He is somebody that has a proven track record of doing good at the job he is hired to do. So when we hired him, he came in, and I'm saying this to prove this is not all about politics, right? It doesn't need to be. And when we go down that road, you end up defending ridiculous, nonsensical garbage like this. That guy is a Democrat. I trust him to run the public schools. Why? He is a competent operator with a history of doing good at his job. This is not rocket science.
No.
Okay. And if we want to keep hiring political activists that have never done anything meaningful in their life, you will continue to get horrific outcomes, not because they're bad, not because they intend bad, but because they're idiots.
You got nothing to add to that, period. I mean, that is it. It's like you refuse to actually look at the consequences of what you're doing. All right. I got a good one to end on, Zach. You'll love it. Detroit's public school system is paying students money to come to class. So they say that this is an effort to fight absenteeism. So for middle schoolers who come to class and get perfect attendance for a week, they get a $50 gift card. They can earn up to $500. For high school students, if they come to class every day for a week, they get a $100 gift card. They can earn up to $1,000. Good idea, Zach, or a bad idea?
It's a horrific idea.
I know.
And it's a horrific idea because it fixes nothing, and to even call it a Band-Aid is ridiculous. Yeah. If you came to me with an idea that based on how many days a kid attended, and then you cross-reference that with teacher reviews plus a GPA, and you said, if you do this, an amount's going to go into this account that you can use to help pay for college. Okay, depending on how something like that was structured, I could get behind it. Again, the reason I can say this to any liberals out there listening to that is because I'm not ideologically wedded to these certain ideas. I'm all about engendering good outcomes. Okay, here's the problem with that approach. What have you incentivized kids to do? You've incentivized kids to cheat and make it look like they're at school when they're really not. And as soon as they get what they want, bailing, they can come this week, get it, miss the next week, come back the next week. There's not, I mean, so you know this, and I'm not saying that this makes me good at running a school district. It doesn't. I'm a fully understanding. When I look at these things from the outside looking in, I understand that there are dynamics and complexities to it that you're only going to know if you're involved, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you ever heard the analogy that success always leaves breadcrumbs, right?
No.
Meaning, whenever I hear somebody tell this great come-up story about how they got started and how they went from nothing to building something, I'm always tempted to ask them, how did you do it? And then I chuckle and laugh and I go, I want to hear your individual story, but I know exactly how you did it, right? Because it's always the same. You worked your ass off. You got very good at doing something that other people don't want to do. And you wouldn't take no for an answer. And you scrapped and you fought and you clawed until something came out of nothing, right? And from my perspective, you also had God's grace shining down on you and blessing that work. But when you hear people going, here's how we can fix the school systems, if it wouldn't make a football team better, it's not going to make a school better.
Yeah.
And taking accountability away from people and rewarding people for half goods, right? Yeah. That does not make anybody better at doing anything. And these are the kind of solutions that you get when you hire children to run things.
Yeah.
It just is. And ironically, it's those same children that pay the price, you know?
They're not being taught the lesson they need to teach. You're going to pay them for doing the bare minimum that's expected of them. And to your point, not even for showing up and getting good grades and paying attention, just for physically being there. And so you think that that's going to prepare them for adulthood where they're not going to be paid just to show up?
I think there's the underlying pernicious aspect of this is I think the people that actually know what's going on, they just want a cycle of dependency.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
So I'm going to teach you early on that meeting baseline expectations entitle you to something. If I actually care about your well-being as a human being, One of the first things I'm trying, one of the things I try to teach my sixth grade football team is just showing up and fulfilling baseline expectations entitles you to nothing.
Yeah.
Extraordinary output is what earns you at better outcomes, but still entitles you to nothing. And to tell people anything other than that is cruel. It's cruel because they're going to end up getting a lifestyle of entitlement, which is atrocious, right? You're going to live in a ghetto. You're going to live in a, it is cruelty wrapped up in a compassionate veneer. And that's all it is.
I agree. And you could apply that same logic to so many different things. Letting the young kids slap on the wrist for gang violence. Okay, well, you didn't teach them a lesson when the, you know, risk was very low, and now they're going to kill somebody or they're going to die. And so you've basically just given them a death sentence. It's insane. All right, Zach, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.